If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Braves and baseball fans, it's time to take a trip from coast to coast across Major League Baseball.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run.
One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed, a perfect game.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes! 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 The Atlanta Braves have given you a championship. Listen to this crowd.
Left side, Swanson to first.
Braves and Baseball Talk, straight from the diamond.
Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today. And Window Nation. Call the pros at Window Nation at 866-90-NATION.
Here's Grant McCauley.
Hello and welcome to From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I am, as that gentleman just said, Grant McCauley. These are the Kia Studios, and it is a Sunday as we close out the weekend in a much better fashion than perhaps we were feeling about less than 24 hours ago, but we'll call it that just because yesterday may have had you down in the valley again, and then the Braves were able to bring you back to the mountaintop a day later. Because it has been, as you might have noticed in last week's show, and if you follow the podcast or subscribe to the podcast, anywhere that you get them, by the way, and on the Odyssey app, this has been a roller coaster ride of a season, and the Braves were on a little bit of a roller coaster in Boston. But as the other saying goes, all's well that ends well, and the Braves were able to bounce back nicely from that very frustrating defeat on Sunday night and get right back in the win column with a 10-4 victory over the Boston Red Sox. And even when the going got a little bit rough in that game, you were able to see the adjustments. The offense answered the call. Spencer Schwellenbach, I felt like, inside of a start, to be able to turn things around, make those adjustments, get himself back on track, and economically get through seven innings. I mean, that's a heck of a testament to him as well, because it just kind of felt like one of those days where after a game that got away from you, would there be a residual hangover type effect? And the Braves said no. As a matter of fact, we did not go past the limit. There is no hangover, and we're good to go to what I'm hearing is called around the industry an off day. The Braves had played 17 games in 17 days. That's a very ambitious run for any club. And they were able to navigate through that with a 10-7 record. Now, yes, it could have been a little bit better. There are a couple of games in that 2.5-week stretch that definitely got away from them, but by and large, you're starting to see at least more wins than losses, which is a requisite for clubs that want to go somewhere in October, typically. And certainly looking and feeling a lot more like a Braves club that you expected to see when this team got together way back in spring training. But there's obviously a whole lot going on in and around this club, certainly on the road trip, certainly in this 17-game stretch here in the month of May, and a lot going on in the very near future. with how much different this team could look in a couple of very big, very important ways. Spencer Strider is slated to come back on Tuesday and be on the mound against the Washington Nationals as the Braves continue their road trip with a stop at Nationals Park. Strider's been sidelined for a month thanks to a hamstring strain that he suffered after his first start in what was basically a calendar year. So he's certainly been through it and I think would like to get back onto that schedule where he's throwing every fifth day and not once every 12 months or once every 4 weeks, whatever the case may be. But Spencer Strider, all jokes aside, is I'm sure chomping at the bit to get back on the mound and get himself back and be a part of this club. And we'll talk about this a little bit later when we unpack the success, really, of the Braves pitching staff. And that might have felt like a weird thing to be talking about late last night. But in the Braves' turnaround this year, their pitching staff has posted in the month of May. And I'm talking on the whole, the pitching staff has posted. That does not mean that they're going to be perfect. It does not mean that you're not going to lose some games. That's going to happen from time to time. Sometimes it'll be the pitching's fault. Other times, as it has been a lot this year, you're going to have to look at the offense and say, can you do more? When can you find that next level? That's another question, of course, the Braves are trying to answer. And a gentleman named Ronald Acuna Jr. is playing baseball in the metro area again. Hasn't made it to Truist Park, but I was up in Gwinnett. I get a chance to see him back in action, and suffice to say, he is very excited about the opportunity to get back for the first time in a calendar year and help this club out. So we'll talk a lot about the return of Spencer Strider, which is a little bit closer than the return of Acuna, but it ain't far out. We'll see if it's sometime this week. We'll see if maybe he needs a little bit more time than that. He had 20 total days on the rehab assignment. So if you do the math, he's got to be back by basically the 1st or 2nd of June. So the return of Ronald Acuna Jr. is right around the corner. And that could be another big boost for this club. But winning baseball games was the boost that they have needed. After they stumbled out of the gates and got swept in back-to-back series to open the year, it might have felt like, man, we are in for a long one this season. That's the kind of ride that you don't want to go on. How are you going to make it right? How are you going to get right? How soon can you get right? Next thing you know, you're 18 games into the season and you're, eight games under 500. So you got to figure out things incrementally, typically. And when, as I've talked about maybe a month ago, when the whole sample size of what you have is just bad in any which way you look at it, it's hard to feel any other way about the season. But I think the Braves have started to do enough on a pretty regular basis to give you the belief that they can, in fact, win some baseball games, and that they're doing it, of course, on purpose, which I can assure you that they are attempting to do all of this on purpose. But as you look into the things that have gone right for this club, certainly the pitching has been part of it. The timely hitting has been, I think, a little bit better in the month of May, and it hasn't come from the usual sources all the time. And one source I think we have to talk about a lot and we'll get into on the show today is Drake Baldwin. This has been a great conversation to have all season long. For a player that had things gone a little bit differently in spring training for Sean Murphy and he'd not been hit by a pitch and forced to begin the season on the injured list, would Drake Baldwin have made his debut yet? I would say no. He'd be hanging out in AAA Gwinnett, working on what he needs to work on and looking forward to perhaps making his debut at some point this year. But baseball and life are funny that way, and it just took that one errant pitch to open that door, and Drake Baldwin has really kicked it down, if we're going to be honest. I mean, you look at what this kid has been doing and the fact that the Braves have, I think, really very quickly established quite a trust with him both behind the plate and certainly at the plate. You know, this is a good problem to have. We'll talk about that catching conundrum, if you want to call it that. Again, I call it a good problem where you've got two very capable players, but who's going to get more playing time right now? I think the answer should be Drake Baldwin. The Braves gave him an extra start on Sunday. A day game after a night game, you do not see that very often. But there he was out there in the midst of the Braves scoring in the early going. Another multi-hit game for him. Just continuing to add to the reasons why this is a big piece of the Braves' success, offensively speaking, when they're able to get this thing rolling. So Drake Baldwin's been a big part of that. But Atlanta, having that opportunity to maybe look at a lineup that, yeah, they'll figure out the catching thing, certainly. We saw some good stuff from Matt Olson, another multi-hit game on Sunday in the 10-4 win over the Red Sox. A couple of home runs in this series, one Friday, one Saturday. That's certainly long awaited for him. Is he getting on track? You get Matt Olson on track, and I think Austin Riley has been swinging the bat pretty well for a while. Marcell Ozuna is Marcell Ozuna. That trio, you get that trio firing, and then you put Ronald Acuna Jr. back on top of the lineup. You get some things from Drake Baldwin, from Ronald Acuna, from Ozzie Albies, and from Michael Harris. All of a sudden, things are making a little bit more and more sense offensively. And I think you're in a good spot when you look at left field because Eli White continues to hit. I think a timeshare with Alex Verdugo makes a ton of sense in left, and you'll figure out the profar thing when you have to, but they got a couple of more months to kind of see what they want to see out of those guys in left field. And Nick Allen has played a pretty solid shortstop. So all of a sudden, it does start to feel like things are coming together a little bit more for this club, but you had to see certain guys start hitting. And Matt Olson is definitely one of those guys. You needed to see that. You needed to see the production, the home runs, the power, the things that he's known for. And I think that no one was more aware of that than Matt Olson. So having a big series in Boston, maybe that's the thing that gets him kickstarted, gets him going back in the right direction. Because as I detailed last week, and I'm not going to pull the paper out again because, quite frankly, I don't want to see it. And I may have thrown it away, and I probably should if I haven't. But there were a whole bunch of guys that you could look at and say, well, that's not good, that's not good, that's not good. And what exactly was keeping the Braves pretty much above water over this time has been what their pitching staff has been able to do. So overall, I think this is a club that's trending in the right direction. There's a lot of, I think, optimism of certainly around the returns of Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuna Jr. And once you get those guys back in there, you start to finally get a look at what the Braves could be, which, by the way, I don't know if I buried the lead or not, but a 500 or better club. Who knew? Well, I think we all expected it, but after the 0-7 start, the Braves got there the second fastest of any team ever to fall to an 0-7 or worse start to a season. But I went back and looked at the other four that were on a list, and I can find the tweet maybe a little bit later. We can dive into it and give you a little bit more info on it. But what you need to know is all of those clubs that have started the season 0-7 and climbed back to 500, none of them made the postseason. So the Braves are looking to buck that trend and be the first one that starts off pretty much the exact opposite of the way you want to, fights back to 500 and beyond, and punches that ticket to October. That, of course, is the Braves' goal in the big sense. A couple little things we'll talk about on the show as far as the Braves are concerned as well. We'll get into the Saturday meltdown. I want to size up the Braves' bullpen because I know there are a lot of questions about it on a nightly basis, and there's a lot of valid questions about it in terms of who's being used and what position, who's available, who's not available, and what exactly it's going to take to maybe stabilize that group. And this may be a shocking statement, but overall, I think the Braves' bullpen is doing okay. Could it be a lot better? Yes. In fact, it could be a lot better. And there are some statistics that back up the fact that they could certainly use some improvement, and no one, I think, is feeling that more right now than the closer, Raisel Iglesias. So we'll dive into that a little bit later on. And then there was another matter that came up in the last 7 days. Since last, I cracked a microphone here at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and talked to you about the Atlanta Braves and Major League Baseball at large, and that was the reinstatement of Pete Rose and the Black Sox. We're going to dive into that on this show, and I've got a really great guest lined up here for the second hour, Jason Stark, who you may be familiar with. He knows a little bit about the Hall of Fame. He's been honored by the Hall with the Spink Award. He has been part of the committees that vote on these players that are looking to gain entry, and that's exactly where Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson and the Black Sox are headed, to the committee ballot, the pre-1980 committee. The classic era, I believe it's called. It's going to be fascinating to see how those committees decide the fate of these guys and how quickly or how long they're going to have to wait for when and if they get into the Hall of Fame, because I'm not sure that it's a slam dunk, but I'm also not going to sit here and tell you that I don't think it's going to happen. It's pretty, it's better than 50-50, but how long might the wait be? We'll get into all of that. We'll get into the nuance that it takes when it comes to the Hall of Fame committees and, of course, the story in general and, you know, whether or not Pete Rose's legacy is much more complicated than maybe a lot of people are admitting, perhaps. And when it comes to Pete Rose and admissions, well, there's a lot to maybe unpack. And we will. We'll unpack all of that. Jason Stark will join me in the second hour. Coming up next, though, we will dive into the week that was for the Atlanta Braves, talk about this trip to Boston, and, of course, what is ahead in Washington and the return of two major stars to this Braves club and Ronald Acuna Jr. and Spencer Strider. That is coming your way next on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I love baseball. Now back to more Graham McCauley and From the Diamond. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOLD on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We continue to discuss the Atlanta Braves. Really, we're going to just dive into it here. This Week in Braves Baseball is where we like to go deep, as the case may be. We'll have other baseball cliches to throw in here. But if I didn't remind you at the top of the show, which I'm pretty sure I didn't, make sure you have followed me on social media. At Grant McCauley is where you can find me in most places. And make sure you're subscribed to From the Diamond wherever you get your podcasts. Or find it on the Odyssey app. I'm quite sure I talked about that, because doing this show this week is a lot different than it felt a week ago even. But that's been the case with this team over the course of the young season when you start out the way that they started out. But now they've started to approach, you know, that, well, over a quarter of the season is now under their belts. And they've got that opportunity to start to really show who exactly they are and what exactly they're capable of, as opposed to maybe the worst of times right out of the gate. So some things are looking up a bit. And why exactly are they? Well, I think this road trip in Boston, while it did have a bit of a speed bump on Saturday, most certainly a chance to sweep an ailing club. You'd like to have taken advantage of that, especially when you have a 6-2 lead into the seventh inning. It wasn't to be, though. But the Braves turned right around and did what I feel like a good club is able to do. They shake off a tough loss, and they come out and figure a way to win. And they did so with tying their season high in runs scored with 10 of those, and tying their season high with 16 hits as well. So the Braves offense came to play on Sunday, and it backed up Spencer Schwellenbach, who made a mistake early and saw a 3-0 lead turn into a 4-3 deficit momentarily, and then just buckled down and kept on going. I think that's a big deal. Those are the kind of little things inside the game, those performances that add up to a win in the end, because he was able to shut down the Red Sox, and I believe he set down 12 of the final 13 batters he faced, after giving up a grand slam to Rafael Devers. I'll talk more about the Braves rotation a little bit later on, get into Spencer Schwellenbach, of course, the return of Spencer Strider, what we've been seeing from Chris Sale, who had, I would say, a bit of an emotional return to Fenway Park on Friday, and the other pieces of the Braves rotation that are a little bit in flux right now as you look to piece it together into a starting five. Not a starting six, but a starting five. We'll get into that a little bit more later. But as this road trip wraps up, you know, the Braves were able to, I think, make the most of the 17-game stretch that they had in winning series on a regular basis. Some games got away from them. Saturday was the latest and greatest example, perhaps. But overall, winning series time and time again is going to put you where you need to get by the end of the year. And after the 0-7 start, and I talked about this earlier this week, the Braves have basically played 600 baseball, which is a pace for a 97-win season. Factor in where they were after, what, 18 games of the year, they've figured out a way to put themselves on pace to potentially win if they continue the way that they have since the 0-7 start. They've figured out a way to maybe put themselves in that 93-plus win category, which, if I told you that when they came home and had that home opener without a win at all, you probably would have said, crazy, show me the math, I don't believe you. But that is the math. And if you want the math again, I'll put it out on social media so you can kind of see what the updated tally is. But overall, the Braves are playing a more consistent brand of winning baseball, even if not everything that they're doing is as consistent as they would like it to be. But here's something I wanted to kind of throw out there from just the overall look of the month of May for this team, which again, 17 games in 17 days beginning on May the 2nd. Despite allowing 9 earned runs in the first of those games and 7 earned runs on Saturday, the Braves pitching staff came into Sunday with a 2.89 ERA for the month, which was second best in Major League Baseball. It didn't move much, even though the 4 runs on one swing of the bat happened. The Braves were able to hold Boston to just that. So a sub-3 ERA thus far in the month of May, again, second best in Major League Baseball. That's a good way to win games. And that, I think, lends itself to what the Braves did so well in 2024. They pitched well. The offense had plenty of questions and also plenty of injuries. But now it looks like maybe they're starting to get a little bit more healthy. Now, the bullpen discussion we'll get into more later because I know there are some questions there that are worth diving into. And the pitching has been doing such a good job in the overall picture of keeping the Braves in games. Occasionally, they're going to get away. Somebody's not going to have a good night. The wrong pitcher, the wrong lever is going to get pulled by the manager. That happens. It's part of the job. And we'll get into that bullpen discussion later so that we can kind of dive into that. And it has been the offense mostly that the Braves have been trying to sort out. But one guy they've been able to count on throughout has been Drake Baldwin, who just keeps making a case for himself day after day after day as a player for this club. Now, what that playing time looks like is a different discussion and one that we're certainly going to get into. But Drake Baldwin today, with 2 more hits and 5 trips, batting .357 on the year now. And coming into Sunday, he had been batting .443 since opening the season 1-for-18 on that 7-game road trip. And remember when we came home from that, and I remember talking to Drake Baldwin that first series against the Marlins, man, you're hitting the ball hard. You're hitting it consistently hard. He's taking his walks where he needs to. He was robbed of a couple of extra base hits, including at least one homer in the San Diego series. And he said, yeah, you know, I was feeling kind of down about that 1-for-18. And then I talked to a couple of guys who said, hey, man, you're doing the right things. Keep doing this. You're going to see results. And the results, I think, are far and away beyond what anybody had imagined if you're going to go on a heater for about a month and bat .443. And to do that as a rookie, even more impressive. But it's the approach. You can see that. It's an all-fields approach. I mean, he lined an opposite field single in his first at-bat, driving in a run. He can go gap-to-gap with you, and he can put the ball over the wall. I mean, there are a lot of things to like about Drake Baldwin's approach and the upside that obviously is there and that we're seeing. The interesting thing about that is, and the question I got a lot this week, I talked about it with Mike Bell, I talked about it with Mike Johnson, I talked about it with other various fans on social media, and look, I'm there for it. At Grant McCauley, you can find me. We can discuss all these things. We want to be civil, and we want to be respectful. Some things that are kind of getting lost in the message here in 2025. And I'll just leave that right there. But Mike Bell and Mike Johnson were very civil and very respectful. And we had this conversation a couple of different times this week of like, what does it mean for Sean Murphy? How do you get Drake Baldwin more at bats? And look, these are legitimately important questions. And they obviously fit together. But for the Braves to have the catching tandem that they have, there are 29 other teams across baseball that would love to be trying to figure this kind of thing out. Now, Drake Baldwin is not going to be playing left field. I have gotten no indication whatsoever that the Braves are even looking at that as a possibility. And I know, and I talked about this multiple times, yeah, they did throw William Contreras out there a couple years ago for one game. It took exactly one game for them to decide this is probably a bridge too far. We're not going to do this. I just don't see it. Unless or until Drake Baldwin is in a starting lineup as the left fielder, I will continue to doubt that that's where he's going to be going. He's not going to be DHing because of the presence of Marcell Ozuna. So there is that. Maybe you give Ozuna the occasional day here or there. And if he's a little bit nicked up and still fighting the hip inflammation or whatnot, sure, maybe you find a handful of at-bats over the course of the next 3.5-4 months there. But that's not an answer either. And despite what some folks around town might be saying, he ain't going to be playing first base either. I don't care if he played it in high school. This is not high school. We're not just throwing guys out there to get him in the lineup. You have to have more of a plan here. And Drake Baldwin's value is as a catcher. His value at the plate makes him a better all-around player than the vast majority of big league catchers. And at this point, I wouldn't look at Drake Baldwin and say, hey, he's the backup catcher. I would just say he's Drake Baldwin, catcher for the Atlanta Braves, and also you've got Sean Murphy, catcher for the Atlanta Braves. Now, the plan coming into spring training, you heard it right here on From the Diamond. I sat down with Brian Snitker way back when the Braves reported, and it was, hey, we want to get Murph in there on a regular basis. We want Sean Murphy to get 3 out of 4 starts pretty much on a regular basis. And the reason why is that's exactly why they went out and got him, to be that workhorse behind the plate, to do the things that he does to lead a staff with his arm, with his framing ability. Sean Murphy is still a very good catcher. He had a very bad year last year. Both things can still be true. Nobody is disputing what the numbers were last year, but I think he's shown at times this year that power is there, it is real, he is capable of making contributions to this club that go beyond his 4 or 5 plate appearances possibly per game. That being said, I think there is a case to be made for riding the hot hand as much as you can and creating a timeshare that might become more of a 50-50 proposition. I could see that being a realistic way of getting Drake Baldwin some more at-bats, unless or until he cools off. And I will say this, and I do not want to be the wet blanket for what is otherwise a very fun story. The league adjusts to absolutely everybody. It is a phenomenon that is universal. You go through the league once, you may catch everybody by surprise. You may have the upper hand. The scouting reports get out. The video gets out. You start to see guys multiple times. They start to decide, hey, you know what? He jumped on this pitch and this count. I'm not giving him that anymore. Let's see if he can spit on all these sliders right off the outside corner. Let's see if we don't throw him any fastballs in the zone. Let's see if we start pitching him backwards and then forwards and then sideways. I mean, there are a lot of different ways and a lot of different arms that you have to face, mind you, that can make it more difficult on a regular basis for a big league hitter. That's why you see guys like Austin Riley, like Ronald Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies, Matt Olson, pick one, that end up going through struggles and sometimes some serious valleys at the big league level, even if they've already shown the all-star capabilities in some cases of all those guys I mentioned. I think all of them are. But be that as it may, for Drake Baldwin, there's still going to be work as he goes throughout the process of being a big league hitter and really establishing himself. But the early returns are tremendous. The way that he's doing it leads me to believe this is a sustainable big league hitter. And I'm fascinated to see not just the playing time that he gets, but the adjustments he makes to the league when the league invariably, inevitably, adjusts to him. And I don't think that this is in any way, shape, or form something that makes Sean Murphy expendable. And there are a couple of different reasons. Number one, I just gave you all the reasons why Sean Murphy is a useful player. But number two, when the Braves have gone out and signed these guys to these multi-year extensions, they don't give out no trade clauses. But let me tell you how bad for business it could be if you just start trading these guys away after they sign multiple years extensions to be in a certain place. So I would be doubtful. Doesn't mean they'll never trade them, but I don't think they're out there just shopping and looking to move on from guys at the first sign of trouble. And that would lead me to believe they're going to continue to play this out and see exactly how the season plays, because we have already seen, if you need a reminder, that one injury can change your plan at a position. It's done it before. It could do it again. And having depth and having quality, those are things that you want. So I talked about that a lot longer than I really planned to, but be that as it may, here's a guy that we need to talk about a lot. Ronald Acuna Jr. He did not play on Sunday for Gwinnett. He got an off day. But in his 3 games prior for the Braves AAA club, 3 hits, 5 walks, and a home run off the batter's eye. But it's not the bat that the Braves really want to see. Will you take those results? Absolutely. In a vacuum, you're excited to see Ronald Acuna Jr. doing Ronald Acuna Jr. things. But they need to really see how he responds physically to the daily action. That's what Ronald's there for. That's what he is aware of. It's like, okay, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to play and I'm going to see how I feel. And then I'm going to, I think, feel more comfortable, more comfortable, more comfortable. And with the soreness that builds up over the course of playing 162 games, if you're doing them all, you're going to go through these aches and pains and those kinds of things. Is it going to be more manageable this time than it was before? And I had a chance to talk to him up in Gwinnett. I had a chance to ask him a question during that presser that I think we can probably talk about in a moment. But he has essentially said that by taking this more methodical approach this time around, he's going to benefit from that extra couple of months. He came back from the torn right ACL in 9 months and 16 days. When he comes back from this one, it's going to be just shy of a calendar year. So that extra two and a half months is going to be meaningful because they just took more time to make sure he was absolutely ready and won't have to take days off, won't have to rely on DHing just to play that day. He'll be able to feel more like himself. Now, he's going to get more comfortable in the outfield. There were some plays on the in the first game in Gwinnett that obviously he'd love to have back. But overall, he hasn't been playing the outfield for more than a couple of weeks, and prior to that, hadn't done it in about a year. So he's going to get more comfortable, more instinctual on those plays. I'm not worried about that at all. But physically, that's the boxes they want to check, is to see how he's doing, how he's feeling, and ultimately go from there. So could he go out for three more games, four more games with Columbus this week as Gwinnett hits the road? He could. Might it be another week, another couple of weeks? Might he bounce between those two affiliates just to kind of stay in the Georgia area? Sure. Could he be back in a week at the big league level? I think he could. Might he go another couple of weeks? We'll kind of see how that all plays out. But overall, I think with Acuna and the team, ultimately, they're going to benefit from getting this thing back together again. I think everybody recognized that after the social media beef between the two. And Ronald, I think, took responsibility for it. His apology was genuine, and he's ready to put that stuff behind him and move on. And I think Brian Snitker and the Braves are as well. So they'll be looking forward to having him back. When we come back, we will continue discussing this week in Braves baseball. We'll talk a little bit more about the offense. Then, of course, we're going to get into what's happening on the Braves pitching staff, and we'll do it next on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building
a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Now, back to more From the Diamond. From the Diamond is brought to you by Window Nation. Get two windows free with every two you buy and pay nothing for 2 years. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we continue our discussion of this week in Braves baseball. Atlanta closing out its road trip, the trip to Boston, that portion of it, first leg, and closing out a string of 17 games in 17 days. They'll get an off day on Monday, and then they'll welcome Spencer Strider back on Tuesday. I want to get into that in a moment. But the Braves, as we know this week, they didn't really celebrate this. There was no champagne popped in the clubhouse. I don't think anybody was really celebrating in the streets either, but they got to 500 and above 500, and that's where they sit after closing out this series against Boston at 24-23, having taken 2 out of 3 from that club, as Spencer Schwellenbach picked up the win, was able to pitch around a third-inning grand slam where it felt like maybe that was going to be the moment where things kind of got out of hand and tilted back the wrong way, especially when you consider not even 24 hours prior to that, Rafael Devers had smoked a game-winning home run as the Red Sox came back from 6-2 down in the seventh inning to win that game and perhaps swing the momentum back the other direction. But the Braves with a 10-4 win on Sunday take 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox. And one great thing that I saw in that Boston series, and there were a few, and we'll talk about the bullpen later. I'll get to it. But Matt Olson's series, a sight for sore eyes, might be a little extra, but you were anticipating that there was going to just be this series. I kind of thought it'd be the one in Pittsburgh not long ago, but I was a little early. But here we are in Boston where he goes 7-for-12 with a couple of home runs, a couple of doubles, one of which was nearly over the Green Monster, but had to settle for a two-bagger. I guess he'll take it. But four extra base hits there, 4 runs knocked in, 3 runs scored for him. And that got Matt Olson, I think, moving in the right direction and had to be feeling the confidence that comes with continuing to, A, do the work, which all of these guys have been pretty proficient at. I mean, if you arrive at the ballpark at the time I do, which is typically between 3 and 3:30 for a 7:15 game, you'll find a group of guys who are out there on the field early hitting. And they'll take BP later, but they're out there hitting. And you'll to get out onto the field to see what they're doing there, you go past the cage, there are more guys in there working 3.5-4 hours before the game trying to sort all this stuff out. So the work is ongoing. The process, I think, sometimes can take a while and can be exhausting for some players, and especially when you're trying to be results-oriented and you're just not getting them. But ultimately, I think talent wins out. And for Matt Olson, there's no question he's one of the better first basemen in all of baseball. It had to come back around for him. And perhaps this series in Boston is the thing that gets him kick-started. His average, thanks to that 7-for-12 series, has jumped up 26 points for the season from what down at 214 up to 240. And that may not be anything to write home about, but any three-game series, you add 26 points to your batting average when you're already about a quarter of the way through the year, you've done a few things right, and I think that it's been trending in that direction for Matt Olson here lately. A big series in Boston, just what he needed, just what the club needed, and if you can get Olson and Riley and Ozuna to hit, you know, consistently in the middle of the order, which I know, understandably, has been a big if, and then you get Ronald Acuna Jr. back at the top, all of a sudden, you've got a whole bunch of just, I think it's the quantity and it's the quality that the Braves expect to have in that lineup, but they had to solve the leadoff conundrum for them. I did some writing about it this year, or not this year. Well, I've done a lot of writing this year, but this week in the Marietta Daily Journal, that Braves leadoff men were hitting .232 with a .269 on base percentage coming into the weekend series against Boston. Ronald Acuna Jr. is a .280 career hitter with a .379 career on base who averages, 37 homers and 30-plus steals per 162 games played. And when you talk about the .162 for Acuna, he also averages 130 runs scored. This is a dynamic player. Put him back at the top of the order. Give more RBI opportunities to the aggregate there when you're talking about the Rileys and the Ozunas and the Olsons. And now you can see the vision of what this offense could, in fact, look like, and it could look like that very soon. But great to see that going for Matt Olson this weekend. A very good series for him. And Austin Riley, I looked at this. I was curious. He was one of the many players last year, Ronald Acuna Jr. among them, who did not get off to the best start. Last year, as Riley's got 8 home runs, we just played game number 47 on the year for the Braves. But Austin got to 8 home runs in his 33rd game this year. So it's been a minute. He's due for another homer or two here sometime soon. But his 8th home run did not come until his 63rd game played a year ago. That's the kind of funk that he was in 2024. So it does look like and feel like Austin Riley has course corrected to more of the pre-2024 player, and that is nothing but a good thing for this club. Now, Michael Harris II is another guy that I think the offense could certainly use some from. Ozzie Albies is another one. But with Harris, I feel like what he does in the field is consistently spectacular. We saw a couple more of those catches up in Boston. Just some really, really good work from Michael Harris II. And the guys who appreciate that the most, not just the fans, but the guys on the mound, can appreciate that. And the Braves rotation is about to get itself a boost. Welcoming Spencer Strider back on Tuesday after nearly a month on the shelf with that right hamstring strain. In order to do that, I wondered if the Braves would welcome him back in and say, all right, we're going to go with six starters for a while, because you had other arms, not necessarily the feature arms of the rotation, but other guys stepping up and giving you quality starts. And Bryce Elder ended up being the answer to that question as the odd man out. He was optioned back to Gwinnett. But it's worth pointing out that Bryce Elder has been terrific over the past month. And if this had been the start, I think, of that 17-game streak of no off days, I think there would have been a stronger case to be made for having that extra starter and not necessarily, you know, going back to the five men in rotation, eight men in the bullpen, because you can't have more than 13 pitchers. Most fans, I'm sure, are aware of that. But just in case you were wondering, all right, well, they never use Arcia, or they don't use, you know, XYZ guy very much. Why don't they bring up another pitcher? That's why, unfortunately. And even the roster expansion that comes in, what, September, is not just, hey, bring up whoever you want on your 40-man anymore. We don't do that. So you have to be a little bit more strategic with those roster moves. But Bryce Elder, it wasn't a performance-based thing. On his half of the equation, he did everything that he could do, and the Braves were the beneficiaries of that. And I think that we could see Bryce Elder do this again, play a role for the Braves over an extended period of time if they once again become short in rotation and they need somebody to jump in there. And I'm sure they'll continue to discuss using an extra starter as needed, the way that they did a year ago, when it makes sense. But for Bryce Elder to be optioned down and to have Spencer Strider back in rotation, the other questions were Grant Holmes in the bullpen. Do you want to go that route yet? And the Braves apparently do not. But what about A.J. Smith-Shawver? Well, let me tell you, what about A.J. Smith-Shawver? He has pitched so well that the Braves definitely chose him to remain in rotation right now. And he could be putting together what looks like a run here. A 150 ERA in his last five starts. The team has won all five of those. And if you've watched A.J. Smith-Shawver, it just seems like he's gaining more and more and more confidence in living in the zone where he needs to and using his split-fingered fastball as an incredible, incredible out-pitch. And that's how you post the results that he has posted here over the last five starts. And I think the Braves have always known that was in there. He arrived ahead of schedule a couple of years ago. Got some postseason experience in 23 and in 24. It was a surprise. It wasn't a plan, but he got some. But he's been able to develop. And you heard from AJ when I got a chance to catch up with him and talk to him about last year and what the development has been for him from the very first time he stepped on a big league mound to what he's doing right now. And I think the thing that stood out to me the most was, even though he's got great stuff, he doesn't always just have to put it in the zone and approach the hitter like, all right, here it is, I'm throwing strikes. You can be much more, I think, savvy is what he's gaining by working with the likes of Sean Murphy, with working with Rick Kranitz, with working with Drake Baldwin. Developing those partnerships with the catchers certainly can help. The game calling, the planning, all of that goes into it as well. And he's been able to do the polishing he's needed to mechanically and to trust himself with the arsenal that he has, which he should have a lot of trust in because it's a very good one. Now, a guy we knew had a great arsenal coming into this year, really not going to be a surprise to you at all, is Chris Sale. And I think he has silenced the questions about his season, the early going, the early results, and that velocity. And he was pumped up against Boston on Friday with seven great innings. 172 ERA for Sale with 40 strikeouts in his last 31 and a third innings. That's across five starts as well. Oddly enough, the Braves are only 3-2 in those five starts, but Chris Sale has been delivering once again on his side of things. And when you got Chris Sale and A.J. Smith-Shawver and Spencer Schwellenbach all pitching well, and you welcome Strider back into the rotation, and you get what you can get serviceable or otherwise from Grant Holmes or Bryce Elder, whoever it may be, you got the makings of a pretty good starting five there. And Spencer Schwellenbach has had to work a little bit harder lately. I mean, this month, I think, has been one for some, I don't want to call him growing pains because he's been around too long really for that, but, you know, what I was talking about earlier with Drake Baldwin. The league sees you more and more and more, and they start to attack you differently. And I heard Tom Glavin talking about this on the broadcast with Brandon Gaudin on television, in that the swing percentage, especially early in counts, the first pitch swing percentage, I believe, was top four in the league, maybe fourth highest in the league, which means hitters are looking at a strike thrower and saying, I am not going to get into a deep count with a pitcher who has six different pitches who can carve me up. And that, I think, is an adjustment then Spencer Schwellenbach will want to make with what kind of pitch do I want to come with early in the count, and how do I want to set guys up maybe a little bit differently. It's all part of the chess. It's not checkers. It's chess when you think about these things. And when you got six pitches, certainly you got the pieces for it to be quite the chess match. But you saw the adjustments that he was able to make even in and throughout this start. Bases loaded, got into a jam, threw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, but in the wrong spot to the wrong hitter, and Rafael Devers hit it to dead center field for a grand slam. Those things are going to happen. Now I need to see, and it's kind of like Major League, let's see how he reacts. Well, how he reacted was retiring 12 of the next 13 hitters, and that's what you really needed to see from him. But I think Spencer Schwellenbach is going to be fine, and I think I've said this on the station very many times. This is a guy that's got the capabilities of making those adjustments, and, you know, the game inside the game, as it's called in some cases, that's really what he's looking to do. Now, Devers, you might remember, not long before hitting the grand slam against Schwellenbach, also victimized Pierce Johnson on Saturday in a bullpen meltdown that we're going to dissect a little bit more later. And, of course, not just talk about what went wrong, but how might we be able to adjust this, to change different usages of pitchers and find the right mix going forward. But also, how is it managed on a day-to-day, series-to-series, month-to-month basis in terms of workload? Because that's part of it. But Pierce Johnson, I will say this, has been the Braves' best reliever this year, in my eyes. And I know Daisbell Hernandez is also up there. So if you want to say 1A and 1B, that's fine. But an 11-game scoreless streak for Pierce Johnson. He was put into a tough situation in the eighth inning with some free base runners and wasn't able to get the outs. And obviously, Rafael Devers had his number. And sometimes, as we say in baseball, it's just cap, tip, and time. And that's what it was. But I think Pierce Johnson is one of the answers for if Raisel Iglesias ain't going to be available on certain nights, and if Raisel Iglesias is not figuring it out, how are the Braves going to sort it out themselves? So that's something I'll get into in depth a little bit later on. But as I talked about with Grant Holmes a little bit earlier, I talked about briefly the decision to leave him in rotation. I think it's a good one for right now because, yeah, you can put him in the bullpen at some point. He could give you that couple of innings or more. He can make that spot start for you. But while you've got him stretched out right now and he's given you six innings of two-run ball, for example, this last time out, it's kind of tempting to just leave him there as your fifth starter and then figure out who's it for, whether it be A.J. Smith-Shawver or Bryce Elder. I don't think Ronaldo Lopez is going to factor into this. We'll find out a little bit later this year if his shoulder is going to allow him to come back in 2025. But if you've got Sale and Strider and Schwellenbach all lined up and you've got some quality options there for 4 and 5, why not leave Grant Holmes in that mix? I don't think that he's going to be the one piece that you put into the bullpen and all of a sudden Raisel Iglesias pitches better. Or all of a sudden you've got the second lefty that you definitely need in the bullpen that has not really shown up and been able to show out just yet. And some of the other guys are able to sort out what they need to sort out, which long season, the bullpen is going to take some hits. You're going to wear it sometimes. And the more relievers you use in a game, the higher probability that there's one you're going to bring in that ain't going to have it that day. And we've seen some of that. We've seen some of all of that. So all of the above, as far as that's concerned. But I think Grant Holmes has pitched well enough to continue to earn starts. And if you decide to go to the bullpen with him a little bit later on, maybe around the trade deadline, you make a different move. Maybe you bring in some relief help. Maybe you bring in another starter, which are both, I think, options for the Braves this year to really explore. Because I think we all know those things did not get done over the winter the way that the club would have liked. And now they maybe need to outsource and figure those things out and get those guys in. But we are a long way to the trade deadline. We're coming up on my real favorite checkpoint of the year, or first favorite checkpoint of the year, which is Memorial Day. You get 54 games into this season, which they will be in, what, a week? Then you'll start feeling like, all right, we're a third of the way through. What is this club? Who is this club? What do we not have? What do we need to change? And what might we want to add when that next 54 games comes around? So a lot of things ahead of us this year. What is ahead of us in the second hour from the Diamond is our trip around the big leagues. And boy, do we have a discussion for this week. And I had to go with the big guns. Jason Stark of The Athletic is going to join me to discuss Pete Rose Hall of Fame candidacy, Joe Jackson, how he factors into this, and what exactly the committees might do with baseball's all-time hits leader now that he has been removed from the permanently ineligible list. We'll talk about all of that and some other big stories around baseball when we come back on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Now, more From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOUL on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we continue our trip around the big leagues, and we have arrived at one of the biggest, craziest stories of the season. Yeah, maybe the season's not that old, but one of the biggest and craziest stories in recent baseball memory, the reinstatement of Pete Rose and the rest of the players on baseball's ineligible list, including the Chicago Black Sox, as they were for throwing the 1919 World Series. So we got a lot to unpack here, and to help me do that, I want to welcome into the show Jason Stark. He, of course, is an award-winning sports writer currently with The Athletic, honored by the Baseball Hall of Fame with the J.G. Taylor Spink Award back in 2019, so I feel he is uniquely qualified to help us out with this. Jason, always great to talk to you. It's one of my favorite parts of baseball season, but this time we're going to have a little bit different discussion because it has to do with something I wasn't sure I'd ever see. The reinstatement, I guess, if you will, of Pete Rose, the Black Sox, and perhaps some others we'll discuss. But thanks so much for joining me to talk about what I'm sure is going to be a hot button topic for baseball for a while.
Grant, it is always a pleasure. And yeah, people seem to have some interest in this for some reason. I don't know why. I can't explain it.
Yeah, who knows? There are a few characters involved in, obviously, all of this, and I do want to get to some of the others in a little while, but the Pete Rose decision, I'll call it, is certainly getting plenty of discussion, and how could it not? And as I mentioned, this is honestly not something I ever expected baseball to budge on. The Black Sox have spent a century on the outside looking in for starters. Rose, though, has that complicated gambling history, and it's almost, I felt like, a more difficult issue to parse through for him than even the Black Sox. So with all of that said, I guess the first question for you I have is, what was your reaction to Rob Manfred opening the door to all of these players?
Yeah, well, I share, you know, your initial response, which is I never, ever thought there would be a Pete Rose Hall of Fame induction day. Never saw it coming. You know, I've heard four commissioners talk about this, talk about all the issues involved behind the scenes mm-hmm. with Pete, all the off-the-field stuff, the way he lied and squandered every opportunity, and I just never felt an ounce of sympathy from any of them.
Yeah.
I never got, like, even the remotest hint that Rob Manfred would ever budge on this. And it's interesting the way they did it. I actually, when I first got wind of it, which was slightly before this announcement, I thought this was the way he would go, because it's a way to open a path again for Pete and not have it be about Pete in theory, but we all know it's about Pete, just like the original rule to keep him off the ballot was all about Pete.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I've talked to a lot of different people who have all kinds of questions about it for me, because in most circles, I'm the baseball guy around here, and I have my thoughts, as I'm sure you do too. And, you know, I really was never one who looked at Pete Rose and thought, you know, I really look at him as a sympathetic character because he made it so difficult to do that. Now, obviously, he has passed away, so that does create another branch of this tree to discuss about, well, why did baseball wait until he's passed away to do it? But I think there are reasons for that, and maybe we'll get into those, maybe we won't. But I'm kind of curious, just outside of Rose in general here, but what message is baseball sending when it began accepting these partnerships with sports books and betting sites and all of that? Because to me, that's a mixed message at best for a sport that's taken this hardline stance against gambling. And even if times have changed and other sports were finding ways to tap into some of that income stream, I feel like that has to at least be part of this discussion.
Well, it's certainly part of the perception.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the way fans now of all sports perceive gambling. It's very different than they perceived it in the 1980s. Look, within every pro sport, and even major college sports, they are terrified that there will be a betting scandal that involves some star player betting on their sport, let alone betting on the team that they play for, or obviously the worst case scenario is having the Black Sox scandal bust adding in and being accused of actually throwing games because of ties to gambling. So that part hasn't changed. It's just the perception of it that has changed. And it's so ironic, man, that there's a sports book at the Reds ballpark.
Yeah.
So people who walked into that ceremony, the Pete Rose number 14 commemoration memorial service that they did at the ballpark in Cincinnati this past week, walked past a sports book where they could bet on the game they were about to watch and bet during the game they were about to watch. So, you know, it'd be naive to say that the climate hasn't changed quite a bit since Bart Giamatti stepped to the podium, but the fundamental rule that Pete broke and then all the lies he told about it, that's the part of his story that hasn't changed and can't ever change.
Yeah, no, especially at this point. Chatting with Jason Stark of The Athletic. He joins me on the WadeFord.com hotline here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, as we talk about the Pete Rose, the reinstatement of a laundry list, actually, of banished players, because the Black Sox are also involved in this. And clearly Rose and Joe Jackson are going to get, I think, the majority of the attention here. And I do want to ask about Shoeless Joe in a little bit, but I think we can all recognize that Rose is one of the all-time greats on the field for a multitude of reasons and records that he holds. And his off-field record is far more questionable. To put it succinctly, it's a complicated legacy. The Hall of Fame is not packed with saints, but I do wonder if Rose's banishment, the reason behind it, perhaps the death of Bart Giamatti, which was ill-timed for Rose's side of things, his slow-moving admission, writing a book to finally do the tell-all, so he profited off of finally admitting that he bet on baseball, at least publicly, jail time, allegations of an inappropriate relationship off the field, all of this kind of seems to weigh his case down, as if that list couldn't get any longer. I guess I'll just ask you, what are your thoughts on the many branches of this conversation? And again, to use that phrase, the complicated legacy of Pete Rose, the player, versus Pete Rose, the person.
Right. If you're going to elect Pete Rose to the Hall of Fame, it means you got to overlook a lot of stuff. You just went through most of it. There's more. You know, I think people inside baseball know a lot more than has ever come out publicly. So there's all of that. And all of that is the reason none of this happened while Pete was alive. But, you know, I wrote a column in The Athletic the day of this announcement asking a question that I can't fully answer. But it just feels to me that what the commissioner did by, quote-unquote, reinstating him, or effectively reinstating him, was to tell us he served his time. Am I right? You know, what's the impact of this, Grant? Like, he can't work in baseball. He can't go to another big Red Machine reunion. He's no longer alive. There's only one possible impact of this, which is to clear the way for him to show up on the Hall of Fame ballot. And I don't know how the committee that votes on him will vote. Yeah. None of us know. There's still a lot of division in any circle of baseball or outside of baseball on what to make of this guy. But if you decide, as I did, that the message was, okay, he served his time, just vote on what he did as a player, then it becomes pretty easy to cast that vote for the guy who got more hits than anyone who ever lived. But then my question is, if we're going to overlook all the stuff and put that guy in, what does it mean for Bonds, for Clemens, for McGuire, for for Alex Rodriguez, for Manny Ramirez? Mm-hmm. You know the list of names. If you're going to let Pete Rose in, you really got to rethink all the rest.
Yeah, and I'm not going to ask you to, you know, be the moral police for all of this, because obviously, as we talked about, the Hall of Fame is, you'd like to say it's about the accomplishments on the field, but that has become a little bit more difficult in some cases. You just laid out some of those. And, you know, for folks that aren't maybe up to speed on this, I know you know this very well, but baseball didn't banish Pete Rose and say he can't be a Hall of Famer. It was once he was going to come up on the writer's ballot that the Hall of Fame decided to get in lockstep with baseball and say, you know what, if you're on the ineligible or the banned list, then you're not eligible to be elected to the Hall of Fame. So he will bypass the writer's ballot altogether and then go to the committee's voting here. And Jason, you've spent a lifetime in baseball. You're connected to the Hall of Fame as much as anybody really can be. How do you think the process plays out when Pete appears on this committee ballot in light of some of the other characters you just mentioned and ultimately how long it might take him to gain election? I just feel like there's no straight path for him, even if he is now off of this list.
Yeah, you can never guess how these committees are going to vote. I've served on these committees in the past, and you know, I can't tell you the names, but there are a couple people my committee considered who got no traction in the room when we debated them and voted, and now they've been elected since then. Mm-hmm. So you honestly never know. It all depends on who is on the committee, who is in the room. But one thing I do want to clear up, because I wrote about this in a piece in The Athletic for Friday, which is people think that the Hall stacks the committee to manipulate who gets in and who doesn't get in. And have there been times in the past where you could easily connect those dots? Absolutely. But if you look at the makeup of these committees over the last few years, it's obvious to me they have taken great pains to stop that. So I don't think when Pete Rose is voted on, Tony Perez will be in the room. Mike Schmidt will be in the room. Any former teammate of Pete Rose will be in the room. They're trying to get away from that. That makes it harder to predict where it's going to lead. It feels to me, this is where we started, right?
Yeah.
Like he's going to get elected. And if you're going to elect him, the first time almost makes the most sense logically. But I never feel safe in predicting any Hall of Fame election because it's way too easy to be wrong.
Yeah, my knee-jerk reaction was, well, I assume now that he's available to be voted on, he will get elected, and it'll just be not a fait accompli, but pretty close to it. And let me close out by asking you about Joe Jackson, because I think his legacy has only grown over the years in possibly the opposite direction of Pete Rose. Depending on what you believe, he may have not really contributed anything to throwing the 1919 World Series. Regardless, the guy who banned him from baseball is probably not up for sainthood anytime soon either, so I actually think Shoeless Joe could get into Cooperstown before Pete Rose. I don't know if you agree with that sizing up of those two, but how do you look at Jackson or any other's chances? Because while Rose dominates the conversation, Shoeless Joe was a pretty big icon of baseball in his day.
Yeah, I don't know how to handicap him at all. A lifetime batting average was .356. You know, it's top, four or five all time. That's a pretty compelling case on the surface before you know anything about anything else about him. But, you know, one of the things I wrote about in the story I wrote Friday was it's so much harder now for these committees to elect multiple candidates. And, you know, I don't know who else is going to be on the ballot with Pete, assuming Pete gets on the ballot in 2.5 years, but Joe would not be on there, but also Luis Tiant will be on there, and Steve Garvey will be on there, and all these didn't get elected. There'll be other big names, and if you just do the math, since they changed the rules and there are only 48 total votes in the room and you need 12, it's very difficult for the committee to elect more than one and almost impossible to elect more than two. So what I'm saying is the makeup of that ballot combined with the makeup of that committee will be huge in trying to assess, does Shoeless Joe get elected? And if he does he come getting elected or vice versa?
Yeah.
And then there's all these other so much. Are they just going to get trampled in the whole Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe conversation? I think they are. I feel really badly about that part.
Yeah, well, to close out, one last thought on that. I know I'm not alone in this area, especially, and for kids who grew up watching TBS in the 1980s, of hoping that Dale Murphy will get his day in the sun someday. And I don't know that his style will ever be able to one-up some of the other bigger personalities of the game. But when you talk about baseball's all-time nice guys and somebody who was dominant in a decade, it sure would be nice to see that happen. But as you mentioned, it is kind of complicated when you get into that room and onto that ballot.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that. Now, Dale Murphy is not eligible for this Pete Rose committee because he played after 1980 primarily, whereas everybody on the Pete Rose ballot will be players whose primary accomplishments came before 1980. So remember that. But the whole Dale Murphy one is... That question is one I'm happy to talk in time because I voted for that guy.
Well, we will definitely take you up on that at some point. I'm looking forward to seeing him get that opportunity again, and good to know the clarification of the revamped committees that the Hall of Fame is using. I think that could be a favorable thing for him ultimately, but I also, I'm sure, just like you, could look at quite a few different candidates and say, man, how's that guy not in the Hall of Fame? But Jason Starkey, I appreciate all of your time as always. Thanks for going deep on the Pete Rose conversation with us. And if you haven't already checked that out and you're listening out there, check out Jason's work in The Athletic. He's written those reinstatements, if you will, and so much more throughout baseball season one in our sport. Jason, really appreciate your time.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Jason Stark of The Athletic. Make sure you are following him on social at Jason, with a Y. It's at Jason S-T, J-A-Y-N-S-T, on formerly known as Twitter, currently known as X. And you can find his work in The Athletic. It is always insightful, some statistical deep dives, and all kinds of fun stuff. Jason truly can do it all. Make sure you're following him. Back, we will turn our attention back to the Atlanta Braves to take a look at some of the big stories from the week. Discuss the bullpen usage question that we were pondering at least on Saturday night, if not quite a few times this year. And we'll take a look at the Washington Nationals series to come. At the Washington National Series, which begins on Tuesday up in D.C. All of that comes your way next on From the Diamond with Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Baseball.
Talking Braves and beyond.
Baseball.
With From the Diamond. From the Diamond is brought to you by Window Nation. Get 2 windows free with every 2 you buy and pay nothing for 2 years. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Really fun chat with Jason Stark there. I always learn a lot when I read Jason's columns and when I get a chance to just ask him questions the way I was able to in that particular forum. I mean, this is such a fascinatingly complicated discussion, the Pete Rose one is. And I've found that over the years, a lot of people are just kind of dug in about it, feeling certain ways. I think a lot of people are maybe open to receiving more information and then changing their opinion on it. And I feel like there are other people that don't really care what he did. He has the most hits. He belongs in the Hall of Fame, and that's it. But there are going to be a lot of things that the Hall of Fame, the voters now, and again, we don't get to just point at the writers and say, all right, let's figure it out in 10 years and see what happens. This is a lot more complicated now, and I think maybe more difficult, but I don't know. It's hard to say. But I think Jason, who's been a part of the committees, the eras committees that the Hall of Fame uses now, rather than just a veterans committee that was looking at decades and decades and decades of players, they kind of divide these things up. As you heard, Dale Murphy is on one that is more of a modern era, so 1980 forward, whereas Pete Rose and Joe Jackson are on the one from the pre-1980 side of things. So you're trying to kind of divide the eras and maybe get a little bit more attention on certain players from certain times. But then I look back at the ballot that Dale Murphy and Don Mattingly were on, which also included Bonds and Clemens, and I believe Sosa might have been on that one, McGuire. I mean, it was loaded up with the steroid guys, and then you had these two 1980s standouts that have their hardcore fans following them that think, hey, you know, both these guys belong in the Hall of Fame. But the room was so divided that there's not much you could do there. Now, this most recent one, and I was at the winter meetings in Dallas for this, Dick Allen, who it took forever for him to get in. I think he had 3 different instances of falling 1 vote shy in committees. Not just, hey, the writers got it wrong and he was a ballot off. No, this was the committees. And those are made up of players, you know, Hall of Famers, made up of writers, historians, and other media members that are able to, I think, have a discussion about it. Now, some weird stuff has also happened in these. I will stipulate the Harold Baines one is probably the strangest. And felt a lot like, hey, he had a bunch of folks that went to bat for him, no pun intended. And he did. And, you know, I don't know that I have that much of a problem with Harold Baines in the Hall of Fame in and of itself, but I do if it is his inclusion and what we're not putting Dale Murphy in or Lou Whitaker or Bobby Grish. I could go on and on and on about this. I got a list of about 10 or 12 guys that I can give you offline here that I feel like deserve a lot more attention to their Hall of Fame cases. But the Pete Rose one, to get more back to the point here and what we just talked about, it's going to be complicated because of his legacy on and off the field. And he has made his off-field legacy almost as big as his on-field legacy is. And that, I think, is a hard thing for people to grapple with in some cases. And, you know, I asked Jason about the gambling and the ties that Major League Baseball now has to the money that comes in from the sports betting online. I don't blame Major League Baseball for going after the money because it's a capitalist society and I understand what they're trying to do. But on the other side, you can't hold yourself on a moral high ground while also accepting money from the thing that you're trying to keep out of the sport. So that is where it becomes a little bit more complicated. And that we're not going to solve on the show. I will also point that out. But I am kind of along the lines of a lot of people, and this may surprise folks. I don't know. I've never felt sorry for Pete Rose for having to deal with the consequences of his own actions. And then to go on lying about it publicly, which a lot of his followers and fans of Pete Rose from what he did in Cincinnati and Philadelphia and everything, I get it. But I just can't look at that and say, yeah, I really feel sorry for this guy. And I don't think the commissioners felt too sorry for him. And I don't think anybody wanted to step up and undo what Bart Giamatti did right before he passed away. But the whole thing became very complicated, very convoluted. And when he did finally say, hey, I bet on baseball, you know what the first thing Pete Rose did was write a book so he could profit off of it and start signing a whole bunch of baseballs that said, I'm sorry, I bet on baseball, Pete Rose, and selling them for $250 a piece. When those are your first two actions afterwards, I don't think contrition is what we're talking about here. I think it was just another revenue stream, but be that as it may, I think we've talked about it as much as we can. We'll see how the voters decide in this committee to deal with Pete Rose, Joe Jackson, and others on that list. But I did want to talk about a few other big things that are going on across baseball this week, and I don't think any team was doing more big stuff than the Minnesota Twins, whose 13-game winning streak came to an end on Sunday as the Milwaukee Brewers picked up a 5-2 victory. But 13-game win streak for this club, if you might remember, I'm sure you do, the Braves very much needed to beat up on a team, and the Minnesota Twins were that team. First 3-game sweep of the year for the Braves came at the expense of the Twins. And after that, ultimately, the Twins continued to struggle. They were 13-20. And then they proceeded to double their season win total by winning 13 games in a row, the longest streak in baseball since the 2022 Mariners. Second longest streak in franchise history, though, for the Twins. I found this interesting. The 1991 team, which we don't talk about here on the show for obvious reasons. No, but the 1991 team had a 15-game winning streak and, of course, went on to win the World Series that year as well. Now, things are not going quite as well in Baltimore, where Brandon Hyde was relieved of his duties, fired by the O's on Saturday. Now, keep in mind, 2023, when he won Manager of the Year, his team won over 100 games, went to the postseason, didn't go very far in the postseason, and then in 2024, they proceeded to win 91 games, go back to the postseason, and get bounced a second time. But this was a club that you were expecting when you looked at the American League East standings. First, second, third, somewhere in there, maybe in a dogfight between three clubs, which the American League East is certainly known to be one of those, and then you'll find the Orioles in last place. As you look at the standings today, 15-28 as of Saturday when Hyde was fired. They lost 10 of his last 12 games and fell to the cellar of the AL East, a place where I didn't think the Orioles would be at any point this year once you got out of maybe like the first or second week where some weird stuff could happen. I mean, look at what happened to the Braves. But you got a lot of the season left to go, but the Orioles flat out weren't playing any better. You've got their stars are struggling, whether that was Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman. Those guys haven't played very well. And then there's the pitching and the rotation in particular. And, oh, man, if you have been upset by some of the pitching that you have seen from the Atlanta Braves in 2025 and think it's the worst it can get, it's not even close. The Baltimore Orioles have had a lot more challenges. And I'm talking about clubs that expect to win. But they did not figure out a good replacement, a suitable replacement for Corbin Burnes, who, you know, may not necessarily be that guy moving forward. They didn't want to give him a big deal. I can understand that. He certainly got one from Arizona. But Charlie Morton wasn't the answer there. He is having about as bad a season as you can possibly have. I mean, to the point where I like Charlie a lot. But I think he's probably looking at it and wondering how much longer can it go on like this. But for $15 million, I don't blame him for seeing if there was one more ride left. But the 2025 ride for the Baltimore Orioles has been a rough one. Tony Mancelino, the third base coach, takes over as the new manager. The pitching, again, was terrible. That's a big reason why, but the offense has also struggled to do anything close. And I found this interesting, too. Jim Palmer, the Hall of Famer, longtime Baltimore Oriole, who is now on their broadcast team, he took to social media with a take that not many folks might have expected from a former player, but he basically said Mike Elias, the GM for the Orioles, he didn't get Brandon Hyde fired. The players did. And I think that the players, and this is kind of what Paul Skene said when Derek Shelton was let go in Pittsburgh, was like, look, we weren't playing well, and somebody had to fall on the sword. And I think this was a case, again, where somebody had to fall on the sword, where some kind of new message and some kind of energy had to be injected into that club to get them to finally, maybe, perhaps, possibly start playing better. If I were to put money on a club playing better moving forward after firing a manager, it's definitely still the Orioles over the Pirates. But the Orioles have played some pretty, pretty bad baseball this year. Speaking of things that are not so great for a baseball team up in that area, Jose Alvarado of the Philadelphia Phillies was suspended for 80 games for testing positive for a banned testosterone. So a PED suspension for the Phillies' best reliever. And they don't have a whole lot of good relievers. Alvarado, 270 ERA, 7 saves for him. Now he is not eligible for the postseason, and I don't need to tell you. You know it. We've seen it. The Phillies definitely saw themselves as a postseason team, but their bullpen has been a big reason for their struggles, on top of how bad Aaron Nola has been. You got to throw that in there. He landed on the injured list as well after getting shelled the other night. But a 4.66 bullpen ERA. That is nearly a full run higher than the Braves' bullpen ERA. So we'll talk about the Braves' bullpen coming up and some of the struggles and the things that haven't gone right and some of the guys that have underperformed. But the Philadelphia Phillies are going through it worse, and I don't think that anybody around here is going to feel too sorry for them. Meanwhile, Clayton Kershaw made his comeback to the Los Angeles Dodgers. You know, they have 9 starting pitchers, so he is now part of that fray. And all jokes aside, one of the great pitchers of our generation, maybe the best left-hander I've seen personally. I'd have to maybe think about it. You know, in the modern era, the post-Randy Johnson era, I think we could all probably look at the big unit and say, maybe the best lefty you ever see. But that aside, 18th season in a Dodgers uniform for Clayton Kershaw. That's only been done 3 times. And I thought that was kind of mind-boggling because you can think of all the great Dodger players, and then you start to look at, oh, well, they were only there for 10, 11, 12, 13, maybe 14 years, and then moved on somewhere else. It was pretty fascinating. I mean, Sandy Koufax only played, what, 10 or 11 years in the big leagues in general. But Clayton Kershaw is the 3rd Dodger. Bill Russell and Zach Wheat, the other ones. Both Hall of Famer, or excuse me, Zach Wheat's a Hall of Famer. 1909 to 1927. So if he didn't come up on your list of Dodgers, don't feel bad because we haven't seen him in a minute. He was playing back in the Shoeless Joe Jackson days. But what does Clayton Kershaw have left, I think, is a question that he's going to have to answer and show the Dodgers. Well, the Angels roughed him up in his debut on Saturday night for 5 earned runs across 4 innings. So a rough return for Clayton Kershaw, but plenty of time perhaps to get himself back on track and make some contributions. That's why he came back for season number 18, went through all the rehab, got over another batch of injuries that he's been dealing with a lot in the last 4 or 5 years to see if he's got something left to give this club. And by the way, Shohei Ohtani still throwing bullpens up to 50 pitches now in his, so we'll see when he's going to be factoring in to this club as well. And one last note for you, an interesting note as far as continuing to pitch. How about Fernando Rodney? Still pitching at 48 years old. Last time he appeared in Major League Baseball, though, was, I believe, back in 2019. But he's been pitching in the foreign leagues for the last 5 years since then, in Mexico and in the Dominican Republic, where he's from. But 327 saves over 17 seasons, and it was a great story up on MLB.com. You can check it out. He is now pitching in the, and I quote, Intercounty Baseball League, which is up in the area where the New York Penn League was. The Hamilton Cardinals now have the closer, Fernando Rodney, for their club at 48 years old. Pretty crazy to see that. But that is the rest of the trip around the big leagues. When we come back, we'll talk about the Braves bullpen. Obviously, some things went awry on Saturday night. We'll see what lessons we should learn from that, what we should take from it going forward, and what possible solutions there are for this Braves club to just get things back on the level and have the mix that they need to. We'll talk about all of that coming up as From the Diamond with Grant McCauley continues on 92.9 The Game.
Back to Grant McCauley for more From the Diamond. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOLD. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley as we close out this edition of the show. I want to remind you, as always, Make sure you subscribe to From the Diamond wherever you get your podcast. You can also find it on the Odyssey app. That's a great way to tap into all the great things happening here on 92.9 The Game. You'll find replays and key interviews and so much more right there on the Odyssey app. It's very easy to access. I like to use it to listen to The Morning Shift, my new favorite show on the station. No, I joke. But it is definitely my top five. Be that as it may, From the Diamond with Grant McCauley is what you're listening to right now here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And we have a little bit more Braves to talk about from this weekend. And what's been going on this weekend for the Braves was taking 2 out of 3 from the Boston Red Sox. That, from the 30,000-foot view, is exactly what you wanted from that trip into Fenway Park. Now, the Red Sox came into it scuffling. They really got beat up by the Tigers, which, by the way, who saw the Tigers as the first team to 30 wins in Major League Baseball this year? Well, they were. And even the Twins, with a 13-game winning streak, couldn't track them down. That's how good the Tigers have been thus far. They, I think, they're not going to surprise people as much as they might have a year ago, but I think the Tigers are going to be a tough team. They're going to be one I'm looking at in October and thinking, what kind of chaos and havoc can they create in the American League picture where you probably weren't this time even a year ago, maybe not even a year ago, the All-Star break a season ago, looking at the Tigers and thinking, well, when they get to October, what are they going to do? But now I think you really have to look at them as some serious contenders. But that aside, the Braves have continued to win some games. They do so at the expense of the Boston Red Sox, but it felt like on Saturday this was a series that could go wrong. And then on Sunday when Rafael Devers hit a grand slam off Spencer Schwellenbach, I think a lot of people might have been thinking, oh, here we go again. Fortunately, the Braves offense did its part on Sunday. The Braves offense kind of did its part on Saturday as well, but that's where we're going to talk about the bullpen here. And the bullpen was fine today. And Spencer Schwellenbach threw 7 innings, so that also helped out. But putting all that aside, this is a group that I think has, for the most part, been adequate. That would be my word to describe it most of the time. But it has some very clear needs. They did not replace A.J. Minter. They did not replace Joe Jimenez. Both of those guys were major factors in the Braves bullpen in recent years. And Joe, I think, again, that loss may be the biggest that the Braves have suffered thus far for 2025. He had to get a knee surgery that he pitched through last year that I did not know it was as bad as apparently it was. But talking to a couple of Braves, I mean, this dude was a warrior last year for pitching through that. And I guess we can see it was pretty serious because there is a very real possibility that he does not pitch this year, though I know he's working hard to try to get back. But he's not a part of the plan right now. And obviously A.J. Minter, we know what he was able to do for the Braves over the last 6-7 seasons. And you just weren't able to go out and get pitchers that could step into those roles. And you weren't able, I think, to elevate from within, at least to this point, guys who are going to be able to do what you need them to do so that you don't feel those losses quite as much. There were a lot of what I would define as spare parts that were pulled in. And sometimes, hey, some team looks at a reliever and they just don't feel like he fits. They throw him off. He goes to another team. He's been cast aside. And all of a sudden, he plugs in and just makes a lot of sense. I mean, that does happen. But the likelihood of hitting on 3, 4, or 5 of those guys is typically pretty low. But what I think is one of the biggest problems for this group, which, you know, the ERA for the Braves bullpen this year is 3.87. They have lost 9 games, though. And that, and part of that can be from the razor-thin margin of error when it comes to the offense and a lot of one-run games. That kind of stuff can happen. But the Braves have also been great in extra innings, so there is that. They can also win close games. And it's never really all of one thing. Typically, you'll find the offense is to blame some nights, the bullpen's to blame some nights, and, of course, the rotation has to do its part as well. But your closer struggling, I think, really creates issues with how you manage that group beyond that. And it would go a long way towards stabilizing the bullpen to get Raisel Iglesias back on track. The home runs have been a big problem for him. He's already allowed 6 of those this year after allowing 4 a season ago in roughly 70 innings. And he's only made, 17, 18 appearances at this point. So you do the math. You don't want Raisel Iglesias giving up 18, 20 home runs, but that's what the pace is at the moment. And if you look at all of the qualified relievers in Major League Baseball, so guys who have thrown, I believe, at least 18 innings, Raisel Iglesias ranks 185th out of 186 qualified relievers in terms of wins above replacement, which, you know, we'll get into the weeds here a little bit on that. I don't think in 2025 it's something that people don't understand. But it basically, if you're looking for value, Raisel Iglesias has not been able to provide it this year, and this is after being one of the most valuable relievers a year ago, and certainly, arguably, the most valuable reliever for the Braves, along with Yo Jimenez. But that's the first major issue in how you view your bullpen. Are the last three outs taken care of? Because if they are, I think at that point, for any manager, they can kind of just reverse engineer that. Hey, we've got a lead. We're feeling good about what we're going to do in the ninth inning. We get six or seven innings out of our starter. Then the equation becomes a lot simpler. But once you have to start figuring out how to get outs in the fifth and sixth innings, and then maybe the sixth to seventh inning, you can't just use the same three or four guys every single time you have a lead. I mean, they do have to work on that load management for these guys to get them through 162 games. And there are going to be some guys who are going through stuff over the course of the year that we're just not going to know about. I mean, nobody's going to come out and announce it before the game. Well, I got three or four guys I want to stay away from because this guy's got a shoulder thing going on. This one has got some back pain, and this one has got a sore elbow. It may not mean they have to go on the injured list because they have some soreness, but hey, everybody's going through it. Nobody's feeling 100% over the course of the full 162. And I think that's part of it that gets brushed aside a lot. And I understand that, hey, look, results are going to speak louder than anything, but there is part of this process that you just have to consider physically what you're asking of certain pitchers at certain times. In the bullpen, there's a ton of attrition for a reason. I think I've likened it a lot, especially with closers, to running backs. They have a certain amount of good years. The outliers have a whole bunch of good years, but most of the time you can look at them and you're lucky to get three, maybe four good seasons out of it, usable seasons out of it. And I'm not talking about just like the feature guys, but the ones who can just serve a good role and can come in and just be that change of pace, if you will, as far as running backs are concerned, to continue that analogy, or the guys that just get you the outs that you need to help everybody else stay on track. That's just part of it. But as you look at what happened on Saturday night, I think that there was more than just, all right, we're trying to stay away from a couple of guys. I feel like there were some question marks that just didn't seem to have great answers. Now, I'm throwing it out there that different guys can feel different ways, and maybe you're staying away from them for more than just how many pitches they've thrown in the last 72 hours, and there's more to that equation. But Rafael Montero, who was picked up from the Houston Astros, who were happy to pay him to go play someplace else, which usually tells you something, they didn't feel like there was a lot of value there. The Braves, though, looking at Montero, you know, career-wise, felt like, all right, well, maybe we can make some adjustments, we can fix him. They definitely needed to try something for the bullpen at that time, and Montero's come in, and look, the stuff is there, but the walks are alarming, and he got into trouble on Saturday night, even though he didn't walk anybody. He gave up a couple of hits because he came in to protect a two-run lead, and then Pierce Johnson had to come in to clean that up. But Pierce Johnson was supposed to be hanging out in the ninth inning because you weren't going to use Raisel Iglesias and you wanted to stay away from Dylan Lee, and it just seemed to be like there was a lot going on. And I know that some people will look at that and say, oh, we're just punting this game. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it's too much to ask when the Braves were up by a 6-2 score for major league relievers to come in and protect a four-run lead. When that four-run lead becomes a two-run lead, though, that math changes. And I don't think Rafael Montero, respectfully, is the guy for those kinds of situations. I think there's a role for everybody in that bullpen to play in an ideal world. But, hey, we don't live in the ideal world, and things do change. And, hey, look, like I said earlier, the more relievers you bring into a game, the more you up your chances of somebody not having it that night. That's the facts. That's the way it works. But in leverage situations, can you really afford a guy that gives up this many base runners? I just don't think you can. If you're going to use Pierce Johnson in the ninth inning, then where's Scott Blewett? I mean, this is a guy that I never knew I was going to be asking this question here in the month of May either. But cast off by a couple of teams, the Twins and the Orioles, two clubs in completely different, you know, situations, but two clubs that aren't looking to throw quality pitching out the door, but they got in a roster crunch and they cut him. And he ended up with the Braves, and what he did about a week and a half ago, going through four innings of extra innings, mind you, four scoreless innings with runners starting at second base in all of those innings. Now, he did pitch on Sunday, which would let me know that he is still alive and available and might could have pitched last night, but he did not. Now, has he earned the opportunity to pitch in leverage situations? I would think if you watch what he did in extras, he probably has. But again, you were just trying to get through it. And I think that's what Brian Snitker was looking at last night. But you're not always going to pull the right lever. And I think that Rafael Montero, again, in leverage, is just not a situation that you want to walk into too many times. Rafael Montero in a four-run game that you're winning or losing, don't care. Not concerned about it. That should be fine. If he can't do the job, then, well, you can reevaluate after that. But that two-run inning that made it a 6-4 game, I felt like should have changed a lot of the equation there. And even if you would have liked to have stayed away from certain pitchers, maybe you just reevaluate that, because, as you know, all the games that you win or lose in April count just as much as the ones you win or lose in May and June and July and all the way into September. And if you want to get into October, you got to win as many of these things as you can. And I would say that the Braves, by and large, have been doing that. But how exactly can you solve for all of this? I think Scott Blewett could be part of it for sure. That guy has shown me enough to make me think, all right, I'm much more interested in seeing what he does with these opportunities than a guy who's walking 7 or 8 batters per nine and giving up the tying base runners before leaving a game and not being able to get the swings and misses that you need at that point in the game. So we'll see. Dylan Lee, obviously, I would put him in those late inning opportunities as well. But if you're having to do math because you're trying to stay away from Raisel Iglesias a time or two or three per week, I understand it. But you got to have the right candidates lined up to get you to the ninth inning, or it doesn't matter if you're saving Pierce Johnson to pitch the ninth inning. You're going to have to use the best guys you have just to get there. And sometimes it's a mix of the both. So I don't know if all this is making a ton of sense to everybody, but this is just kind of my thought process for all of it. Is it's a long season. You try to manage these guys the best you can from a physical and mental standpoint, and you're not going to be able to throw the same guys every single night every time you have a lead, but maybe having a couple of better different options could help the Braves navigate through some of this a little bit more to their liking. Because this kind of loss just kind of feeds into the expectations of you want to win every game you can, and especially the ones you hold a nice lead in late. And certainly, I think everybody's looking for ways to make up for the lackluster first 3 weeks of the season. And this would go a long way towards that. So what exactly is available to the Braves moving forward? Juan Carlos Lara is certainly an interesting arm. He's been lighting up the radar gun at AAA. He's got the arm, but does he have the consistency, I feel like, at this point, to compete in Atlanta? Maybe the Braves will give him that opportunity. We've seen, you know, over the years that, I mean, Spencer Schwellenbach was a great example of that. You'll elevate a minor leaguer if you feel like he can be competitive and help you out. A.J. Smith-Shawver was an example of that. I mean, these are starters, but I don't think that it's, you know, that far of a stretch to look for a guy to give you a little bit of something. And I'm not saying let's put him into the eighth and ninth inning role, but I do think that there's a path to try to find out what you've got internally before you go shopping at the trade deadline, where I really think the Braves could find themselves the opportunity to up their chances. Now, Lara has looked absolutely great from a radar gun perspective, and a lot of people have been asking me about him. And I'm going to be honest with you. If you're going to look at a pitcher in AAA and AA this year with an ERA over 11 and wonder if he's a better option than somebody you've already got at the big league level, I think it speaks to a little bit of the depravity that maybe we're dealing with a couple of guys being MIA, those guys being A.J. Minter and Joe Jimenez, and it might just speak to just being a little bit close to the panic button on some of the other options. But I would preach patience with the Braves bullpen with Juan Carlos Lara. If he's going to be a part of this, he's going to have to show that consistency. But a name who has shown some consistency and some results over the last decade and a half is Craig Kimbrell. He has finally thrown back-to-back games. That happened over the weekend with Gwinnett. His fastball has elevated about a full mile per hour on average, so he's now up in that 94 to 95 range where he was living in that 92, 93 with the occasional 94 over that first couple of weeks. Now, gone are the days of 97-plus, perhaps. I would imagine that that's not really going to be in the cards, but with his knuckle curve and a fastball, if he can throw it consistently for strikes, which has been a bit of a problem in AAA as well. The strikeout rate is lower. The walk rate's a little bit elevated. But you know what the track record is. Why not give him the opportunity? And I think that could happen at some point, now, especially now that he's on back-to-back games, here in the next few days, the next week, whatever it may be. It just seems like Craig Kimbrell is finally starting to show the signs that, hey, it looks like he could be ready to come up and help out. And we'll see if he's going to be able to be more of the first half of 2024, Craig Kimbrell, than the latter half of 2024, because remember, he pitched his way right out of the Orioles' bullpen and was designated for assignment at the end of the season. So he's trying to work back and find himself in some consistency there as well. Coming up for the Braves, an off day on Monday. It's not a typo. They really do get a day off. Then on Tuesday, they'll play the Washington Nationals, opening up a three-game series at Nationals Park. Of course, Tuesday, the return of Spencer Strider. Dylan Dodd had come up and has been optioned back down to the minor league, so the spot is open, and Spencer Strider should be primed and ready to go on Tuesday against the Nats. 6:45 p.m. first pitch. Make sure you are checking that out, because I'm sure everybody's ready to get eyes on Spencer Strider again, and you'll be able to do that on Tuesday. Then it's a Wednesday, Thursday. Both of them, I believe, are 6:45 first pitches. Then Friday, the San Diego Padres roll into Truist Park, where they will begin a three-game series with the Atlanta Braves. So that's what's ahead for this group. It has been an interesting week. The Braves are over 500. They're looking for reinforcements. First, Spencer Strider. Maybe a little later, Ronald Acuna Jr. Appreciate all of you tuning in this week. As always, make sure you subscribe to From the Diamond wherever you get your podcasts. My thanks again to Jason Stark for joining the show. My thanks to Garrett Chapman for being the producer of this fine program. I look forward to catching you next Sunday right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. And until then, so long, everyone.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hosting season's here. Are your Windows guests ready? Early access to Blinds.com's Memorial Day Mega Sale is on now. Save up to 40% site-wide and get a free measure. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. 100% online with upfront pricing. No showroom markups. No pushy salespeople in your home. Whether you're a DIY warrior, prefer the white glove treatment, or somewhere in between, Blinds.com can help. Our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. Plus, we can even handle everything from measure to install. Style every room effortlessly with classic shutters for living spaces, blackout for bedrooms, motorized options for ease, shades for your patio too. With over 25 million windows covered and 40,000 five-star reviews, Blinds.com is the trusted name in custom window treatments, all backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Early access to Blinds.com's Memorial Day Mega Sale is happening now. Shop and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.